Friday Night Racing.
On Off the Ball.
And they're off.
Brought to you by Go Racing. Plan your day at the races at goracing.ie.
And a very good afternoon slash evening to you, depending on when you are consuming this fine sporting content coming your way. If you're with us live this afternoon on our social channels, well then, well done you, and you're right up to speed with exactly how we like to deliver stuff to you, wherever you are, whenever you are, and we are ready when you are. So it's Friday Night Racing on a Friday afternoon right here on offtheball.com and across our social channels. We're also live on the radio tonight from 8 o'clock as well. And with us as ever is Johnny Ward, but a special guest this week is Mark Enright. Mark, how are you doing?
Good, yeah, good, thanks.
Not a bad time of your life at the moment.
No, it's brilliant.
Mostly we're talking hurling here, of course.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Until Sunday week is a good time anyway.
Yeah, well, no, I think we'll be talking about hurling now for a long time.
Until Sunday week.
You mightn't agree being a Galway man, but no, it's been good for a Limerick man. Certainly good week, yeah.
Yeah, not bad from a hurling perspective, but also pretty shit hot from a racing perspective too. Three big races in Galway. 33 to 1 shots on the second day or the first day?
The Wednesday. So had a good day. Had a first reserve get in, and she won a 33 to 1, won a handicap hurdle race.
A rugby connection.
With Sean O'Brien, who's head of the syndicate, who's a good friend of mine. So I actually put him off backing it before it.
Well done.
He rang me and asked me what were the chances, and I said, look, it's her first time in a handicap. I think she's going to have it all to do. So
this is Ravetta, is it?
Ravetta, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
so
horse Julie bolted up anyway.
Yeah, won by about 10 lengths probably.
Really?
Probably won a bit too far. So I didn't hear from him for about 3 hours after the race, but I think he calmed down. But no, he was happy out. He was happy out.
So tell us a little bit about how that works then. The horse was a reserve. At what point of the day do you understand that you're actually going to be in the race?
So it was first reserve. So I was declared on it the morning before,
okay.
At 12 o'clock the morning before.
Okay.
But not knowing... waiting, hoping to be a non-runner. So I think at 10:30 the morning of the race, Kate Harrington, Jesse Harrington's daughter, rang me and said that she was getting in, and it was all systems go. So
and in the race, right, you're like on a 33-1 shot that you've told everybody, nah, this is not too soon. Don't stay away from this one. At what point do you realise, uh-oh, this thing's alive?
It's Sean O'Brien you're dealing with here, like, not dealing with any Mira Martins.
I suppose she didn't know she'd be 33-1, and you can't go out riding horse as if they're 33-1, you know. You just have to go out, and I did what I was told. She just found her way, and the further the race went, the easier things got for her. And
your own expectations were pretty low, like.
Yeah, like on paper and on form, you wouldn't have fancied her, but you can't go out and ride a horse like they've no chance, you know. Even though she was 33-1, you can't go out and ride them like they're 33-1.
Sure.
You have to ride every horse like they're a favourite, and yeah, she stormed up the hill, thankfully.
And like coming up the hill when she just keeps getting stronger and stronger, that must be a pretty amazing feeling.
It was good, yeah, it was good. She went down, she hadn't jumped great through the race, so
okay.
I was just trying to hold her together, and she went down, and I think the only hurdle she jumped well was the last. Went down and winged the last and charged clear, and I think the first thought that came into my head then was, geez, he's going to kill me.
Some muted applause to go, you're like, yeah. Romping home by 10 seconds, everyone's like, oh, for God's sake.
And actually, it was one of those days where punters were struggling, and it was reserve as well, so a lot of people wouldn't even have known it was running,
yeah.
And the place went quiet. To give Mark ample time to think about what he'd say to Sean O'Brien.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, he's all right. She won again on the Sunday, so
happy days.
He was happy out. Yeah.
Well, that's not bad. It's good for it's a good plug for the ownership as well. And then so the Galway Plate is the same day, right?
Yeah. Right, it was two races later. Yeah.
Right. So you're coming down from that a little bit concerned about the ownership connections of that one, and you're on another 33-1 shot, and you're like, nah, probably no chance of this one either.
Yeah. I was riding Clarkham, who's a former dual grade one winner. Like, he had the form in the book, but his form at the last 2 years wasn't that great.
Okay.
I was told to go out and enjoy myself. The horse liked to bowl along up near the front. Very good jumper, so there was no pressure. Just went out. We got a nice start. Went down and winged the first, and he travelled away. Winged every fence after that. And just got the others on the stretch, the horses behind me, got them on the stretch jump and took a length or two out of them at each fence. And he stormed up the hill 33-1 as well.
And so when are you thinking, like, during the race that you're going to win? So is that, like, from quite far out, you're thinking, wow, this is great. This is going really well. In this instance, because he's jumping well.
Yeah, he was jumping super, and I knew I was getting the ones behind me on the stretch with his jumping, but I also thought he's kind of more of a 2 miler than a 2.6 horse.
That must have been a very hard place to be when you're trying to conserve him, but he's jumping that well. What are you going to do? Like,
yeah, I just, like, he's an old rogue now at this stage, you know, and I didn't want to disappoint him, but I won't lie, when I jumped 3 out and I had to look around, I said, geez, I'm plenty far in front. I said, right, we're going to grab the bull by the horns, but if I get beat, Gordon's going to kill me. But
because the heel in Galway as well, George. Like, but I was looking at it, I was like, is this gone too quick? And even jumping the last, it's a long way to go.
Yeah, but I'd never gone too quick. Yeah. I'd never gone too quick because I was never going faster than I wanted to go. It was, he's jumping got him there, and he's jumping made up all the lints. Mm. You know, I got lints out of jumping, and I went the speed I wanted to go the whole way through the race. So I knew I hadn't gone too quick, and he's jumping won it for him.
Mm. How does he get good at jumping in a race like this, after a couple of years of being an old rogue?
Well, he was always a good jumper. He ran in every sort of a race, you know, and he was always a good jumper, but I suppose he just wasn't seeing out races, and maybe he just wasn't happy in himself, you know. But it was just the way the race was suited. A horse came up beside me, going to the fence away from the stand, and kind of half disappointed my horse a little bit, but he fell, and when he fell, it just gave me a little bit of breathing space to.
That was nearly the win of the race in a way, was it?
I think so.
Explain that. Sorry, what do you mean disappointed your horse? What happened?
My horse was loving it in front, right. You know, and I had got a nice soft lead, and I just steadied it up a little bit to give him a breather coming up the hill the first time, and the horse.
Drumcliff
on O'Connor. He just loomed up beside me, and we jumped the fence past the stand. And we turned around the bend, we jumped it together, and my horse had just kind of half dropped the bridle as if to say, oh, not again, you know, I'm going to be overtaken again. And he fell, and it gave me just 2 or 3 lengths on my own to get him back on an even keel. We went down, winged the next 3 fences, and
That's the psychology of it that people don't understand.
No,
as well.
I'd say,
their characters, like.
I'm kind of gobsmacked, because I haven't heard anybody talk about a horse being disappointed.
But he's probably like a fella that's been on a losing team an awful lot, you know, like old Limerick hurlers, I suppose. And but it gets into your head that, you know, I'm going to be disappointed again. And
who are Galway playing football this weekend?
This weekend.
Yeah.
But
one winning Croker in 2 decades.
Long time. But he'd been running in so many good races that he's bound to feel that pressure a lot. And he'd been running as a juvenile hurdler, as a 3-year-old. Memorably, Brian Cooper got injured on him at Cheltenham. So he's actually quite long in the tooth for a horse that isn't that old.
Right.
He's had a lot of racing.
Yeah,
He's had a lot of racing. And he's showed up to a lot of those big handicaps as well. And, you know, he's been at every dogfight. He was in Cheltenham and Daintree, I think, you know, punches down as well. So
that's incredible, like, to be rock up and goal with him as well.
Yeah.
And in fairness to Jigginstown, so Jigginstown would be criticised for running these horses, that especially in the Irish National. And people would have said, why are they running Clarkham, the Galway Plate? Well, the more horses you have in a race, in fairness, they won the race with a 33-1 shot.
Yeah.
They won a big pot, like.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like, any of those horses can return to form on any given day, so, like, it was just thankfully it was him.
And is that a one-off, or is this now Clarkham?
No, like, he could get great confidence from that, you know. Again, it's what he does, what Clarkham turns up the next day, you know. But he'll definitely get a little bit of confidence from it anyway, so you'd hope so.
And then on the final day at Galway, you won with Show and Go, which was a 12-1 shot as well.
Yeah, another spare ride. It had 9-10, so I only got on that on the Friday morning. My agent got me on it for Henry de Bromhead. And I actually thought he had quite a good chance going there. He'd won the time before, won really well in Wexford. And he'd only 9-10 in his back, which on the ground was fairly dead on the Sunday, so it was slow, sticky, kind of gluey ground.
Explain the 9-10. That's your weight?
That was the weight the horse had, you know, which is bottom weight in the handicap.
Okay. So rule out the vast majority of jockeys.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's my bread and butter, basically, the lightweight, so I'm able to do it without a sweat. I'm only kind of, anyway, about 9 stone 2 or 3.
Okay.
So it's very easy to do the lightweight, so it's a big advantage in those good handicaps as well to have a lightweight, especially on that sort of slower ground, you know. And I thought Ruby had me coming up the hill. He was after getting a nice freebie in front, but he was quite free through the race. But we got him in the last couple of strides anyway, thank God.
Okay, so that was a much closer finish.
Yeah, I think I won a couple of lengths in the end, but we wore him down up the hill, and thankfully we got by him.
To have winners for Jessica Harrington, Henry de Bromhead, and Gordon Elliott and Galway's, That's more than writing a CV, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Look, it was just the way things turned out that week. You know, the first reserve mightn't have got in. I only got on Clark Am at 11:30 the morning beforehand.
John Cliff might have stayed up.
Might have stayed up. It was just one thing after another. It was one of those weeks where everything clicked, and thankfully it all clicked for the right reason.
How do you deal with a week like that then? Because like, you really have to enjoy this, because it's what's rare is beautiful, right? And at the same time, you know, racing is one of those sports where if you're unbelievably successful, you still get beaten way more often than not. Like, even if you're like the very best in the world at being a jockey, you still suffer defeat all the time. So when you have a big week like that, is it like, do you just have to stay in an even keel, or do you allow yourself to go a bit crazy?
No, absolutely, you stay in an even keel. You have to get up and go to work in the morning. If you don't go to work, you're not going to get rides. Like, we were racing, I think, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday this week so far, and I've had no winner yet. Loads of rides, a couple that were lower prices than I'd normally ride.
Right.
And not at the game.
None of them won. So
is that because of this week? You have a really good week like this, and then suddenly you get on the better horses. Is that?
Well, that's it, yeah. You definitely get more rides because of it. You know, it's like, for a lot of us, you know, we don't get the chance in the Aintrees and the Cheltenhams and these bigger meetings. So, like, Galway is our stage to showcase our talents. And thankfully, I had an unbelievable week in Galway. So, you know, I just hope I can keep kicking on now through August and try and keep kicking into the winter.
So, as a career, it doesn't seem particularly stable at the moment.
Definitely not. No, definitely not. Like, I'm freelance. I've nothing set in stone. I look at the entries when they come out every week, and you know, I'm only hoping I'll get on spares, you know, and there's not a lot of spare rides, so you have to put in the groundwork and, you know, the early mornings.
What is that groundwork like? Is that just meeting people and saying, look, I'm available, this is my CV, I'm really good? Or, I mean, obviously not your CV, but like, they know who you are to a point where you're like just reminding people. How does that work?
Well, it's just riding out. It's getting into different places. Like, I'm in Gordon Elliott's 4 mornings a week now, which is brilliant, and Gordon's been great to me, and if I wasn't there, I wouldn't have won on Clark Am the other day. So that's great. And
so you'd have ridden Clark Am out?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, ridden out the odd morning. I'd sat in him a few times before the race, you know. But you have to be, like, today I was in Gordon's for 3 lots. I was back to the Curragh for Aidan Howard to ride 1 lot. And then I was in Lee Valley in Ratoat for Lorna Fowler to school another horse. You know, so you just have to put in the miles and get around to as many different trainers as you can to be at the school of horse, or just canter a horse around the gallop, you know. Just get yourself out there and spread out and do as much work as you can, I suppose.
And what's the ambition then? Like, what do you want to ride full-time for a trainer? Is that ultimately your goal, or is the freelance life actually something that suits you and your temperament at the moment?
No, well, I don't think anyone really wants to be freelance. It's just like, I'd love to have a job. I'd love to be a Gordon Elliott stable jockey, or Henry de Bromhead stable jockey, or William Mullins, Jessica Harrington. I'd love to have a steady, stable job where you could look at the entries at the start of each week and say, right, I'm going to write this, that, and this.
Yeah.
But I look at them and say, right, I'm going to ring him, see can I get on that. I'm going to ring him, see if I go down in school that in the morning, will I get on that? You know, there's no stability being freelance, you know. But, like, I think Gordon Elliott said it a few times, you know, if you don't start out with the ambition, in his game, obviously he's a trainer, if you don't start out with the ambition of being champion trainer, there's no point in doing it. I'd love to be champion jockey. It probably will never happen. But you just have to stick to that mind frame and keep working as hard as you can, and you never know what could happen.
So you look at Rachel Blackmore, like, who people said should never have turned pro, was really struggling as an amateur, really going nowhere, and now she's leading the jockey stand in August, you know, and she's riding for everyone under the sun. And why can't you believe, you know, if you believe in your own talents?
Absolutely, and Rachel believes in herself, and she works unbelievably hard. She works as hard, if not harder, than anyone else, you know, in the weigh room, and she's at every school in race, you know. You could find her anywhere. You could turn up in a field in Wicklow to ride work for someone, and Rachel will be there beside you, you know. So she puts in the hard yards as well, and, you know, she's getting what she deserves now.
It's kind of like comedians playing small halls, and then overnight they have they're selling out the point, and everybody's like, well, you know.
Yeah, well, racing, you don't get time to celebrate because you're riding in the next race. It's never ending racing. There's racing pretty much every day, bar like Christmas Day. So there's no time to let up, and you can't. Mark just has to kind of look to the future now and enjoy Galway, but you can't just rest on your laurels or you're done, because Irish racing is far too competitive. It's small pie, and you know the main jockeys have a certain portion of it, and you have to fight for the scraps, like.
Yeah, and you are competing against everybody else in the weigh room. Like, it's noticeable whenever you see footage from the weigh room that there's a camaraderie, but there must at the heart of that also be a cutthroat. If I don't beat you, my family might not eat this week.
Absolutely. Well, you're self-employed, like, so you're working for yourself, nobody else. So you have to, like, when you go out there, like, you have a lot of friends in the weigh room, but if someone looks for an inch that you don't want to give them, you don't give them that inch, you know. No, we all look after one another. You know, you have to look after lads. You don't ride dangerously or anything else like that. But it's just, you're self-employed. You're out there to win for yourself. The trainer you're riding for, and you need to give it 100%.
The poor old owner.
And the poor old owner. Yeah, but no, it's as I said, you're self-employed.
You think you want to get off your chest there, Johnny?
The owners are looking at him like, you know, Mark, you're riding for me today. You know, and I want the best. Like, and yeah, I don't care if it's Ruby Walsh coming up your inner. Do you know what I mean? Like,
smack him if you have to.
Yeah?
Yeah.
On the head. However he'd react to that.
Yeah, I'm sure he'd just take it lying down. It's
definitely, I don't think so.
That's definitely his character, all right. Tell us a bit about your background, because you're from Limerick, but you're not actually from a horsey family at all.
No, not at all. I grew up, my father had a few greyhounds up and down, and I got into it. It was actually a neighbour of mine down the road had a couple of ponies, Patsy Lynch. And I used to go down there, and geez, for years, my brother used to be going around sitting up on their backs, and Patsy would be leading them around the field, and I was afraid of my life, I wouldn't go into the fence to them. But something just clicked me one day, and I took a liking for them, and it was actually Pat Flynn on a show on RT.
Oh, with Hector?
With Hector, yeah.
Only Fools Buy Horses, yeah.
And I got real into it. It was on every week for 3 or 4 weeks or something.
Very, very watchable.
Yeah. And I just got hooked on this, and watching the jockeys, and I thought, geez, this would be grand. It, like anything when you're younger, sure, I wanted to be in the army, I wanted to be a carpenter, I wanted to do everything, like, but
You were well young then, like, that's a while ago.
That's a long time ago now, yeah. But it just clicked me. I was still in primary school, I think. Mm. And so after a while then, I went for riding lessons, and I started riding out then for Billy Lee's dad, Mike Lee, on the weekends, who actually sadly passed away a couple of months ago. But, you know, he was a tough taskmaster now, and we had a tough apprenticeship there. But, you know, it definitely stood to me.
Jeez, what a rider Billy is, like.
Billy's unbelievable. That was, you know, one of the things I took out of Galway more than anything else was I was leading jump jockey on the Sunday after the week. And
he would have been a billion to one now to be leading jump jockey. Like, this was an incredible achievement. Like.
Yeah, it was huge. And I think I was just after getting presented with my trophy, and Billy came in, and he was after getting his trophy. I didn't actually realise it, but Billy was after getting leading flat jockey for the week. So for the two of us, you know.
You're from within very little of each other.
About 7 minutes over the road. That's from one another.
You were so kids together.
Well, Billy would have been a few years older than me, but when I started off there, I'd known Billy, and we kind of trucked on together since then. I lived with Billy for a while and stuff, but
hope you got a photo together.
We went out and got a picture with Pat Healy, but I think that was very special, especially, you know, with Mike Lee after passing away a couple of months ago. You know, for the two of us to stand and be leading jockeys in Galway, that was huge.
So you mentioned there that you obviously win the jumps at Galway, but you started out as a flat jockey.
Started out originally in the flat, but the weight got the better of me. I'm actually lighter now than I was when I was apprenticed on the flat. But
what's that, better eating or just fitter?
No, I think just more of a routine, I suppose. I was sure, I was only 16, 17 when I started riding the flat. I was only after leaving home. You know, it was my first bit of freedom. Yeah. So
Goodfellas pizzas and a pint of milk for dinner.
It was my college for the first couple of years. So at the bit of freedom, I went a bit wild. But I never really got as much of a kick out of the flat as I got over jumps. So no, definitely a jump jockey is definitely the way to go.
Well, and would you ever go back? Like, is it something that you think you can do?
I rode a few in the flat in Galway. I'd mix it a little bit, but like it's a tough game.
See, Robbie Colgan riding flat winners away in Galway, like,
and unbelievable rider. He's very tidy.
What weight are the flat jockeys? What's the difference?
Kind of like I think Billy be very steady at 9 stone every day, you know, but there's a lot of lads lighter. 8'4" is bottom weight on the flat, you know. It's 8'4", 9'10" is bottom weight over jumps, so there's a big difference, you know.
Yeah, okay, so 8'4" might be a struggle.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. For now, I can do 9 stone, all right.
You've no interest in 8'4".
No.
How was your Galway?
Yeah, it was grand. I'm not just saying that because he's here, but I think was the unquestioned highlight was Mark winning the Galway plate, because obviously he's been very brave to talk about his own struggles in not only in racing but in life. And you identify with somebody who's been honest, like that life isn't straightforward. And Mark is one of these milieu of jockeys who has a lot of rides but not that many winners, because it's just they're just not there. And to ride a 33-1 shot the way he did, like, it was nearly the equivalent of going out in the Grand National and making the running, because you're always looking behind you, you know, is there something coming at me? But like, the fact that virtually everyone lost money on the race was redundant, because Mark Enright won the Galway Plate. And I think that's what Galway is about. And to finish top jockey in the flat was, it's not like a massive award over the course of the season, but like, it was incredible. And that was my, I would have lost money in Galway, but that would have been my favourite memory anyway.
Yeah. Mark, Johnny brings it up there. You made the decision to go public with the fact that you had suffered from depression, and I feel like not enough people can ever do that in sport in particular, because everybody watches sport and we hold sports people up as, well, they're immortal for a few seconds whenever they win or they do something amazing. But actually the truth of it is that life is messy and really difficult and very hard. And that must have been difficult enough to go public with the decision.
Yeah, I suppose going public at the time, I'd been away and I'd taken a break from the game for a while. I'd obviously been in St. Pat's mental hospital for a while as well, and I just got myself back together. And I had told some of my friends at the time, and obviously, like, when you tell, if any more than two people know something, it's too many, obviously, yeah. You know. So like, some people knew, some people didn't. I was a little bit paranoid going back into the weigh room in Gore on the first day I started back, as to who knew and who didn't know. I had said originally I was out with my appendix, and I just spoke to Adrian McGoldrick, our doctor, the Turf Club doctor, who is unbelievable, and you know, I can't thank the man enough for what he's done for me.
Up now.
You know, yeah, who's retiring at the end of the year, but like, he's been so good to me and to all of us. But I rang him and I said, look at Adrian, I'm a little bit worried about going back into the weigh room. I'm a little bit paranoid about who knows and who doesn't know, and I don't want to lie to people. And he said, well, would you like to do something in the race and post? And I just thought about it for an hour or two, and I said, look, here goes. I done it for myself, nobody else. You know, I done it for my own conscience, really. Just I wanted people to know and I can move on.
And it was handy now, because everyone knows. I don't have to text 50 people.
Exactly.
Just everyone reads the race and post in the industry.
Everyone got it, but it was much bigger than what I had thought it was going to be. And like, I think thankfully it's helped an awful lot of people.
And do you know why it's bigger? Because everybody knows somebody who has suffered from depression or who is suffering with depression. And it's like, it's this awful Irish thing we have where we keep stuff bottled up and then somebody breaks ranks and everybody goes, yeah, me too. I have exactly the same story.
Absolutely. You know? And the amount of text messages that I got from people that I'd be seeing every day and say, look, I've been through it myself. Do you know, I was gobsmacked to see the amount of people that had gone through it. And like, at the time I thought I was in this hole that I was never going to get out of. And like, I genuinely thought at the time I was the only person that was struggling from this, you know, like, nobody else can feel this bad. But like, it's as common as the flu, you know. It's just it is what it is now. It's common, and like, the more people that talk about it now, the better. And hopefully.
And do you feel part of that, like, that movement that we have become more articulate as a country and better as a race of people at helping people to talk about it, to deal with it, and to just normalize the fact that it's as common as a flu? And it's actually, you know, for the people who are suffering, it's a massive deal, and for their family, but for the rest of us, all we should be trying to do is help. It's like, not actually any of our business, and there should be no stigma attached to this.
Absolutely. And like that, the more people talk about it, and like, even doing things like this, just some one person might hear this and get something from it, you know. So the more we talk about it, the better, definitely, you know. And just have to keep talking about it, I think.
Yeah. I do find sometimes that people come out with their stories, and that's the one part of it that they didn't expect, that they're kind of thrust into the role of unofficial spokesperson for whatever it is they're talking about. And, you know, you're busy dealing with your own stuff, and then suddenly it's like, well, the media are ringing you up going, here, listen, I need you to tell that story again. Yeah. Maybe put a bit more sorrow into it for us.
Yeah.
Will you? You know,
yeah, like, it's something I get a lot of now. Do you know, anytime something goes wrong or something, and even after winning the Galway plate, I suppose it was just like the word depression was brought straight back into it. But you know what? I don't mind, because the more the word is used and people hear it, the better.
The bad thing about that is, well, like, there are hundreds of jockeys or whatever, like, and when you, Mark Enright, as like, I will always associate Mark Enright with the lad who was admitted publicly that he had depression, but like, there are 50 other jockeys who have or had depression in Ireland or England, or many more. Like, the study was done, and it's actually very, very widespread, and it's probably a sport that half leads itself, because, you know, you're often starving yourself a lot, you're under immense pressure, and it's very, very difficult. And Mark Enright, it's kind of like that no footballers are gay because no footballers ever come out gay. That's clearly not the case. There are a lot out there. It's just that Mark was brave enough and was in the right place, I suppose, to tell his story. So it's a lot more common. It's just others are just dealing with it in a different way, which is fair enough.
And it definitely feels like racing as a community is ready to deal with that kind of stuff. Like, it feels like, I mean, there's definitely a macho element to the, in the past anyway, when we would have spoken to people, they wouldn't have been too keen on the science of dietitians and all that kind of stuff. And you're thinking, but that's madness. Like, of all of the world, you guys need your nutritionists and your dietitians, and you're like, you should all be weighing out how much vegetables you're having, as opposed to, I'm having a square of chocolate today and a black coffee tomorrow.
The mad thing as well, if you read Robert Inca's book, who was the German keeper who sadly took his own life, like, he was in a chronic, really, really, really bad with depression, yet he could go out on the football pitch and basically nobody would know.
Yeah.
And he was still able to perform. He was just, for that 90 minutes, he was able to mask it, which I think is really, really important for people. It could be anyone who has it. And always ask somebody, you know, how is he or how are you? But ask them a second time, how are you really? Like, I've just noticed you're a bit quiet, like, are things all right? Like, because you do have to look out for people. It could be anyone, you know. And the fact, like, for depression to be taboo is just absolutely ridiculous, because it's the percentages are so high, do you know what I mean?
And yeah,
it's just a part of our complexity.
I think the thing as well is, people always say, you know, you need to talk and you need to tell people. But a lot of the time, for me personally, definitely anyway, it was, what do I tell someone? I don't know what's wrong. You know, I don't know why I'm feeling like this. Like, how do I verbally get it out there? What do I say to someone? But I suppose you just have to tell them, I don't feel quite right. And, you know, you maybe seek the help of a doctor or someone, but just definitely get it out there to someone that I'm not 100%, you know.
It came out by accident for you.
It came out, I had a breakdown. It was very weird. One Sunday I was walking home, and like, I was, to be honest, I was almost at the point of no return, and I was walking home from the town, and it was the only day, it was the year Mark Walsh was flying. He was almost champion jockey, you know, and it was the only day that year that Mark had no ride. He had a ride every other day. It was a Sunday.
Hard to think, like.
A Sunday in Nace, and every other day in Nace, he'd have a full book of rides. And I was walking down to get to my house. I had to pass Mark's house, and I just seen his car there, and I said, sure, look, I'll go in and have a cup of tea with him. And I was as low as I had ever been, and call in for a cup of tea, and I just broke down into the cup of tea, and, you know, it all flooded out. And, you know, thankfully Mark rang Adrian McGoldrick, and he came over. And
Mark is one of these lads, like, who, to my mind, is the most talented jump jockey in Ireland at the moment, but he's very quiet. Certainly is to the press, but he was there that day.
He was there that day, and
things like that.
He's actually godfather for my little daughter Sophie now. You know, he's as good a friend as anyone could ask for. You know, he's a brilliant fella.
It is mad, the little things that help you along the way to get out of whatever hole you're in, and you just hope again that anybody who has found themselves in those difficulties does reach out and does find help and does find somebody like Dr. McGoldrick, who's kind of ready to help and does find a mate like you found, you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
If you think as well, like, we all came from a little thing that came out from under the sea, and we all evolved into the humans, how could we not be a little bit complex? Do you know, how could we all be perfect? It just doesn't work like that.
Yeah. JP, our producer, says, speaking of fish, tell us about your nickname.
Nickname Fish. I was living with Martin Ferris in Cashel, and I came home one evening, and I said, Martin, I need to ask you something. And Martin said, right, go on. I said, can I get a goldfish? I said, I'm a bit lonely in the house. Martin was away.
How was a goldfish going to help?
I was sure it was something to feed and a bit of responsibility for myself, I suppose.
Goldfish, I'd feed, sorry.
It's a goldfish. But, so I asked Martin, could I get a goldfish? And he said, no, definitely not. So himself and Davy Condon started calling me fish after that. I can't swim either, so that's a bit to do with it as well.
That definitely helps. All right, let's move on and have a look at some of the races that we should talk about this weekend. You wanted to talk about Arlington. So Arlington is this famous track outside Chicago, and there's plenty of Irish interest in it.
Yeah.
This weekend. Slightly longer odd shots in the Secretariat Stakes. Oh no, hang on, I get the favourite in the Secretariat. It's the Arlington Million. We're slightly longer odds.
Yeah, we're rocking over there with a fairly big team, and actually Aidan O'Brien brings two Camelot horses over there who would have decent chances. But Platinum Warrior Michael Halford, who must be his first horse ever to run in the US for Michael Halford, I would have thought.
God, I would have thought so anyway, yeah.
Now this horse ran in the Irish Derby, but he banged his head coming out of the stalls. He wasn't unfancied on that occasion, and I'm just checking actually the time of the race. It's roughly around midnight tomorrow night, but I think he's very happy with how he's settled in over there, and that's probably half the battle. Like, I mean, it's obviously quite hot over there now. You have to settle into the routine, and I quite like his chance. He's dropping back to a mile and two, that's in the 10:48 Irish time, the Secretariat Stakes, and he's a decent chance, I think.
Okay, and then the other one is the Arlington Million.
We have the perennial traveller Deauville, who's 5-year-old now. He's been around the block, should run very well, and I think the Irish could have a winner or two over there. They're not ridiculously strong races. Analyzer should probably win the Secretariat for Chad Brown, but you know, the likes of Hunting Orn, Loose Tiberius, and Platinum Warrior will put it up to them. And you've a busy weekend as well.
Busy, yeah. 5 in Kilbeggan tomorrow, and 2 Sunday in Downpatrick. So a couple of nice rides in Kilbeggan tomorrow.
You've got to tell us more than that, like.
Yeah, I've only had a look at the decks. I haven't had time to go through them properly yet, but I ride a nice horse in the handicap chase for James Sheehan, who's a very shrewd trainer called Minds Made Up, I think. Mm. Yeah, he I think he'd have a
course winner.
He's probably the best of my rides. He'd have a big shout.
So. Have you ridden him for?
No, yeah. Not first time to ride him.
So Mark's telling us to have a look at Minds Made Up, but for everybody else who's listening who was here at the start, make sure you look at whatever's 33-1 that he's putting us off. So that's a really good chance.
He's clearly a good judge anyway.
yeah, definitely.
Let's have a look at the races in the Curragh. There's a couple of group races on Sunday in the Curragh. And let's start with the Keeneland Phoenix Stakes here. Advertise, a lot of hype about it, Advertise on the front. Advertise one of those horses that seems to be a mainstay on the front of the Racing Post. And Frankie Dettori rides. So what do you like here? What's going on in this race?
Well, this is a fascinating race because if Advertise didn't come over, which was mooted that he wouldn't, like, it would be a complete benefit for Aidan O'Brien. Nobody really wants that. I don't even think Aidan wants that. It would have been like 5 runners and he'd have 4 of them. Sergei Prokofiev will be something like 5s on. So as it is, you've the quintessential match where Advertise, and this is where race form reading comes into its own, because Advertise beats Sergei Prokofiev in the Coventry Royal Ascot. As such, why can't he beat him again? But I think looking back in the Coventry, I think Sergei Prokofiev had a messy enough race. He had to work very, very hard to chase Calix, the winner, and then basically just got tired and Advertise passed him out. And also, Aidan has 4 horses in the race, so he can kind of call the shots in terms of tactics. So if he thinks Sergei Prokofiev is his best horse, he can kind of instruct other horses to be ridden in certain ways, and they're not non-triers or anything, but I think Sergei Prokofiev, he's trying to win the race for the 17th time, which for a guy who's like 49 or 50.
Not bad, is it?
If he's listening in, I apologise. I think he's 49. Looks, could definitely pass for a lot, you know. Not saying he'd be asked for ID, but he definitely could pass for a lot younger. But
in the States, maybe.
In the States,
over in Arlington.
So God knows, he could well be in Arlington and get fly back, be here for the Curragh. That he expects his jockey to do that, and he can be back for work. Like he's some man. But I do like Sergei Prokofiev. I think he's a great bet. And I should mention as well, Alpha Centauri running in France in Deauville.
Yeah.
I haven't seen a filly like her. Have you seen her in the flesh?
She's unbelievable. I have actually. Yeah, she's unbelievable even to look at. But
so she won the 1,000 guineas, the Coronation Stakes, and the Falmouth Stakes.
The performance the last day I thought was just unbelievable, wasn't it?
Different tactics. And now she's taking on the boys. But like, it looks like a mismatch. She's basically built like a brute of a man, not even, you know, she's huge. Like, Jessie said she thought she was a jumper when she got the weights. She thought she was getting the wrong weight when she weighed her as a two-year-old. This is as a two-year-old. She's just a freak.
Because she's so big.
She's massive.
Right.
I saw a photo there midweek of one of her handlers, and it was like Grand National winner. She was absolutely huge. Yeah. As long as the rain doesn't come too heavily in France, you can,
There's been a bit of rain, apparently.
Yeah, I think they didn't get the storm. They were half expecting. I mean, the weather's been mad. How could it be anything but nice ground in France? But couldn't see her being beaten. I have to say, I'm not even 100% sure what she's running against. I know Romanize is over there, but she's awesome. And it's great that the Irish bounty in the classics this year has been just spread around so much. Like, I think we've had four different classic winners already.
And so what happens off of Centauri? At what point do they go, okay, you're going to be a mare now, and we've decided that that's...
Yeah, that's a big question. Like, putting on the old Irish racing promotion hat, I'd like to see her in Leopardstown next month, but I don't think that's on their agenda. They're just taking a different route. Might stay in training next year, not 100% sure.
Yeah, it's a hard one to call, isn't it?
Like, she's three, so she's probably going to be bigger again at four. And just imagine a four-year-old. She could become an absolute legend of the turf. You know, Trev kept going, Enable kept going at four. I'd like to see it. The family don't need the money. She's not a stallion. She's not going to miss out on millions for her first year. She can only have one, baby a year. So I would hope that she stays in training at four. I think racing really likes stories like that. Also, she's a filly, like, and we warm to fillies and mares.
Yeah, okay. So we didn't look at the 10 past four, which is the Qatar Racing and Equestrian Club Phoenix Sprint Stakes.
Yes.
Also on Sunday at the Curragh.
Gordon Lord Byron rocking up for what must be his 100th appearance. He's been like Tom Hogan, you know, had a winner in Galway, a trainer who's been around the block for a long time. 10-year-old now, Gordon Lord Byron. I think Spirit of Valor will win this for Aidan. He's reverting to sprinting a bit, but he's a good hardy horse. Probably the class act here. Wouldn't want rain. A little bit of rain today, but even in Sligo the other night, and I couldn't get over how quick the ground was. I was walking across it, like, the country is, like, for Sligo to be that.
Yeah, it's unreal. You know, we were there last night, and the same thing again.
Yeah, lively, for jumpers, like.
Yeah.
So, but I would like Spirit of Valor in that 4:10, the Phoenix Sprint.
You must have fallen on this hard ground over the summer, have you?
Yeah, too many times. Too many times.
And
yeah.
Is it, like, noticeably different, the...
Oh, yeah.
The smack?
Even the soft falls during the summer hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure the falls hurt all the time.
And the softer ground is not too good.
Actually, Kieran Kelly passed away in Kilbeg in a fall, and he's honored and won the races, I think,
tomorrow night. Beginner's Chase tomorrow night, yeah.
It's 2003, I think, now.
Yeah.
So 15 years ago. I remember vividly, like, Kieran, obviously, if Desi Hughes would have passed away as well since, but absolute gentleman, Kieran, and honored 15 years on by Kilbeggan, which was unfortunately the last racetrack that he ever rode at. But he'll be definitely fondly remembered, and still, like, most of the jockeys remember him quite well.
Yeah, okay. For this week's the Tote.com charity bet, we're going to turn our attention to the Tote Pick 6, which is a guaranteed 50 grand this Sunday at the Curragh. By playing at 50 cent a line, it can cover 96 possible winning combinations for €48, giving us a good chance to win big for the Injured Jockeys Fund. The aim of the Pick 6 is to pick the winners in races 1 to 6. You can choose just one potential winner in each race, or you can cover multiple combinations, as we're doing, to increase your chances of winning. Keep an eye on Twitter for our Pick 6 selection. Also of note at the Curragh this weekend is the Race 6 Tote Trifecta, which has a rollover of €11,231 already. To play the trifecta, you just pick the horses to finish first, second and third in the race. And you're going to make those selections first. You're going to pick six winners in six separate races, Johnny. That
can be done. Well, it can be done because you have a few selections. So it's not like you have to, you know, pick one in each race, and that's virtually impossible. So I've gone for four selections in the first. 1, 5, 6 and 10. Two selections in race 2, 2 and 8. Race 3, 1 and 2. And now I'm going to go a bit brave and tip Sergei Prokofiev and Spirit of Valor just on their own in race 4 and 5. So race 4 is 3, race 5 is 5. And then if we're still going for the 50 grand for the Injured Jockeys in race 6, 2, 6, 12, 13.
Well, that'd be good. What? Winning, picking on 50 grand for the Injured Jockeys. That would be the best thing you've done this week, Johnny.
It might be, wouldn't it?
I'd prefer to win it myself, but a close second, you know. But in fairness, the Injured Jockeys, like, it is a noble... It's definitely a noble thing to give a few bob to, because these lads are followed by an ambulance, you know. You can't say that about many people in their general workday.
No, absolutely not. Friday Night Racing brought to you with goracing.ie. Check that out for all of your information about your racing needs and what cards are coming up, and indeed what race meetings are coming up as well. Great stuff. Thanks very much for joining us today. Really enjoyed that.
Thanks for having me.
Tony, as ever.
Top man.
Good stuff. We'll see you next
Friday
week.
Friday Night Racing.
On Off the Ball.
And they're
on. Brought to you by Go Racing. Plan your day at the races at goracing.ie.